The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Tonight I'd like to talk about the quality of patience. Earlier this week in the householder retreat, I mentioned that two qualities I feel are really helpful for a daily life practice to continue to support our investigation and our work to bring this mindfulness practice into our daily life. And those two qualities, I think, are patience and resolve. Patience because bringing our mindfulness practice into our daily life is no easy feat. It's quite a challenge because we're distracted by so many things that come by. Our relationships, our work, our everyday activities. And so bringing our mindfulness into that takes quite a bit of, I'm going to do it anyway. I'm just, you know, we'll forget, we remember, and then we resolve to keep trying. So that's where the resolve part comes in. And the patience comes in because it is so difficult. It is such a challenging thing to corral our minds and keep them in the present moment. So we need quite a measure of patience to do this work in our daily life, as well as on the cushion. So I'd like to talk a little bit about this quality tonight. Patience is one of the qualities that is said to be cultivated as we open our hearts. There's a list of these qualities, and they are qualities like generosity, virtue, effort, wisdom, energy, patience, truthfulness, kindness, equanimity, resolve, those kinds of qualities. And these qualities are both, we need to cultivate these qualities as we engage in our practice, and they are cultivated almost by side effect of engaging in the practice, of engaging in the mindfulness itself. As we bring our mindful awareness to our practice, to our experience, as we bring our mindfulness to our experience, we start to see that mindfulness itself has some very beautiful qualities to it. It has a kind of a non-judgmental attitude to it. That if we're just able to be aware of what's happening, there's no need to have any judgment about it. And it brings also a kind of a sense of kindness or openness, a compassion that comes along with just the mindfulness, just being with experience, is kind of like a holding, a gentle holding of experience that has a feeling of compassion or kindness. So the mindfulness itself, just working to cultivate that, the mindfulness itself cultivates some of these beautiful qualities. But it is also helpful to kind of direct our attention to these qualities. And tonight I'd like to particularly look at patience. So there's different aspects to patience, three different kind of facets of patience that I'd like to explore this evening. There's the facet of persistence, a facet of tolerance, and the facet of acceptance. And each of these qualities are, these three facets of patience support each other, and they in turn cultivate more of the quality of patience itself. So for instance, if we simply function with a persistence in our practice, just a gentle, simple persistence of staying with experience, that begins to reveal some of the benefits of being with our experience. We begin to, there begins to be a kind of a tolerance to some of the difficult experience. And we get a little bit of patience, a little bit of balance around some of those difficult experiences. And then there's a little bit of faith that comes in. Oh, this practice works, which then leads to more persistence. So there's a kind of a way in which the development of some of these beautiful qualities feed themselves. It's kind of like you start with a little bit of the quality and then you get the benefits, and then that encourages us to go in deeper and to try more. So starting with this facet of persistence. So some synonyms that relate to this facet are perseverance, steadiness, diligence. This aspect of patience kind of highlights the active quality of patience. But it's not simply a passive state of mind. Sometimes I think when we think about the quality of patience, we kind of think of sitting back and waiting. You know, like you're waiting, patiently waiting at the dentist office or something. You're just sitting back and waiting. But patience, the persistence aspect of patience, has an active quality to it. Tanisaro Bhikkhu, or Tan Jeff, who I think many of you probably know because he comes here regularly to teach, and he also writes many of the books that we offer for free distribution here. So he sometimes talks about the patience of a farmer. He says his own teacher talked about the patience of a farmer. And I'll read this little bit from one of his books. Ajahn Tante talks about being patient like farmers. Those of you who have never lived on a farm, even you know that farmers don't have an easy life. They work hard, especially in Thailand, where they don't have a lot of labor-saving devices. When the time comes to do what needs to be done, they have to do it quickly. In other words, when the rice grains are ready, you have to harvest them quickly before the mice get to them. You have to take care of them quickly, winnow out the rice quickly before any late-season rain comes to spoil it. So it's not a matter of being slow or casual, this patience of a farmer. The patience of the farmer is the sort that knows you can't plant the rice today and expect to have grains ripen tomorrow. It's going to take time, and during that time, it's going to require work. So it's this patience that doesn't mean passivity or slowness. It means there's work to do, and it needs to be done now. That we can't delay the work that we have to do. So it's more of a patience with results, that we have to take the actions towards cultivating the conditions that will allow mindfulness to flourish, allow some of these beautiful qualities to flourish, and then to hold the results with patience. So continuing to persist with what needs to be done, with simply bringing our attention back over and over again, just persisting with our practice, attending to how we take care of our relationships with others, attending how we observe our minds, even when it seems like nothing is happening. You know, if you think about a farm, if you think about the way plants grow, it takes a while for the plants to grow. You know, you plant the seeds and you kind of just have to have faith for a while that when you're watering them, that something's actually happening there under the ground. And then some days or weeks later, you see these little shoots and there's some evidence. Oh, something is happening. But you can't, you know, rush the process. You need to keep watering, keep weeding, and allow the plants to grow. You can't kind of pull on the plants and make them grow faster. So it's a process of doing what needs to be done to support the conditions and settling back and allowing the process itself to unfold in its own time. We can't really rush the way our hearts unfold, the way our hearts awaken. We bring the mindfulness to it. We bring kindness to our experience, as much non-judgmental awareness as we can. And that process itself is like weeding the soil and providing the sun and the water. And the heart will start to open. The heart will start to relax and let go because the conditions have been provided. So over time, as we do this work, as we bring our mindful attention to our experience, at first when we persist in bringing our attention to our experience, it seems little more than actually just will is doing anything, that you know, we're just directing our attention and not seeing much happen. But over time, we do start to see these little shoots. We start to see little changes and shifts. Perhaps we see a little bit of a tendency towards anger that we notice and let go. Or we see that we're angry and we hold back from speaking to somebody out of that state of anger. We start to see these little shifts in our experience. And we begin to see something is happening. We start to see that there's a change happening. And these shifts start to encourage the persistence. So the steadiness with which we commit ourselves to our practice. Over time, it starts to seem like something we want to do, as opposed to something we have to do or feel like we need to do. It just becomes part of our... Gil sometimes talks about an imperative towards waking up. You know, this movement, it becomes almost a necessity to pay attention. There's another analogy that I like about this kind of quality of just a persistence with doing what needs to be done at the time it needs to be done. And this comes from the suttas. It's a story that the Buddha tells, and he uses an analogy. Instead of a farmer, he uses the analogy of a hen on her eggs. And he gives a two-part analogy. He says, suppose there's a hen who doesn't sit on her eggs, doesn't do what needs to be done, then no matter how much she wishes the chicks to hatch, they're not going to hatch because she hasn't been doing what needed to be done. But if there's another hen, he says, suppose there were a hen with 8, 10, or 12 eggs, which he has covered, incubated, and nurtured properly. Even though she does not wish, oh, that my chicks might pierce their shells with the points of their claws and breaks and hatch out safely, yet the chicks are still capable of piercing their shells with the points of their claws and their beaks and hatching out safely. So simply by doing what needed to be done, the wish doesn't have anything to do with it. The wish for the result has nothing to do with it. It's simply taking care of the causes and conditions allows the results to flourish in its own time. There's one teacher that I've sat with in Massachusetts a few times, and she tells a story. Her name is Kamala, and she tells a story about a time in her practice with her where she felt like just pretty much nothing much was happening. You know, nothing was pretty very much wrong, but it just didn't feel like anything was going on. She's doing her sitting and her walking, and it just seemed like nothing much was happening. And she went to her teacher and reported this to him. And he wasn't very impressed. He just sat there and he looked at her and he said, when the fruit is ripe, it will fall from the tree. And I like that analogy too, that there's a sense of, you know, when the fruit can look ripe, you know, it's completely formed, it's the right color. And yet there's still something happening inside that's not obvious. The sweetening is happening. And when the fruit is ripe, it drops. There's no need to do anything, to pick, to pull. And it's simply that staying with, just being with whatever is happening. That gentle persistence allows that fruit to ripen. The second facet that I'd like to talk about is this facet of tolerance. This is the aspect of patience that's related to tolerance of difficulty or patience under insult. Some synonyms, endurance, forbearance. We often think of this aspect of patience, particularly with respect to our relationship with others, the way others function, the way we have to be patient with how other people are getting on our nerves. And like persistence, this quality of tolerance can have an active quality to it. We can cultivate it actively. Even though we might not feel tolerant, we can act tolerant. So, for instance, it might mean refraining from doing something that would express an intolerance or a frustration or a dissatisfaction to somebody, or refrain from speaking out of judgment. So that's in a way acting tolerance, even though we don't feel it. Now, I'm not suggesting that we try to repress our feelings. That's not so helpful. But to clearly acknowledge, yes, I'm feeling this intolerance, but to choose to cultivate the intention towards tolerance, to choose to behave in a tolerant way. And that kind of has a rebound effect on the mind. It can rebound on our mind to choose to act in a way that's in line with tolerance. So slowly over time, we cultivate that intention towards tolerance, even if we're not actively feeling it. I don't want to give the idea that in Buddhist practice, being tolerant always means refraining from action. There are times when there are things that happen to us or things that happen in the world, injustice, racial injustice, discrimination of all kinds, where there needs to be some kind of action. So in this case, the tolerance isn't so much about saying, oh yes, accept the discrimination or accept the injustice. It's about tolerance of the process of change. I have a lot of respect for the teachings of Gandhi in this regard. He had this philosophy, and I love this phrase that he used, non-passive, non-violent, non-cooperation. To the injustice. So it's not passive, but it's also nonviolent. So in this case, again, there's not a tolerance of the injustice, because there are active steps being taken towards the to express the I don't know what quite the right word is, but to express that the injustice is not acceptable. But there needs to be some tolerance of the process of change, because things don't change overnight. this kind of practice, nonviolent, non-passive, non-cooperation, requires some endurance of the continuation of injustice, even which might get worse as perpetrators rebound against the non-cooperation, and self-control to refrain from acting out of violence. I really respect this philosophy because it's a very active kind of movement towards injustice, and yet it is in line with the teaching of non-harming. It's completely staying true to that teaching of non-harming in the non-cooperation with the injustice. We also, in addition to needing to cultivate this quality of tolerance to others and in our relationships or in injustices, we need to cultivate this quality of tolerance in our own minds. Patience with the difficult states of mind. Patience with anger, aversion, rage, hostility. All of the difficult things that come up for us in our minds. The habits of mind. We've spent years cultivating these qualities, these habits. Society reinforces them in many ways. And we can't expect them to simply go away because we would like them to go away. As we start bringing our mindfulness to some of these difficult experiences, we do see how we suffer from them. We see that we ourselves suffer when we're experiencing anger. And we ourselves suffer when we're experiencing frustration or disappointment. And in this case, again, tolerance means tolerance of the process of change. It's not so much about saying, oh yes, this aversion can continue forever. It's about recognizing that it takes some time. We need to bring our attention to this process, these processes, these habits, these patterns that have been reinforced over years of behaving. Slowly, over time, bringing mindfulness to it begins to weaken the fiber of that pattern. Sometimes as we pay attention to these difficult states, afflictive emotions, sometimes they're called, they actually seem to get worse. I mean, they at least seem to be more obvious to us. Partly it's because we are paying attention to them now, as opposed to simply rebounding off of them and going and acting off of them. They become much more present in our experience for a while, and it almost seems like things are worse, that they're coming up more. But actually what it is simply that we're recognizing how prevalent they are. I think we can also use this quality of, or this philosophy of non-passive, non-violent, non-cooperation with these states of mind too. So it's not passive. Our engagement with these states is not passive. We actively bring our attention to them, understanding how they form in our experience. What is going on? How does it make the body feel? What kind of thoughts does it produce? So we actively engage in the exploration of understanding these states, these afflictive emotions. So it's non-passive. Non-violent, because the quality of mindfulness tries to bring some of these more beautiful, open qualities to it, the kindness, the compassion, non-judgmental awareness. That brings a non-violence to the observation of our experience. And non-cooperation, because we're committed to not necessarily following through on that energy. So not acting out of that afflictive emotion. So non-passive, non-violent, non-cooperation with the habits of our own mind. So persistence and tolerance, two qualities, two facets of patience. The third facet I'd like to talk about is acceptance. And this facet, when we begin to taste this facet of that of patience, we really start to feel the depth of patience itself. Acceptance is that quality of mind that doesn't resist what's happening in the present moment. Ajahn Sumedho gives a teaching. It's a very simple teaching, and I probably can't convey it. I don't know, some kind of transmission or something. He says that when we observe our experience, it's simply just knowing it's like this. Fear is like this. Anger is like this. Hostility is like this. That's a form of acceptance. It's really cultivating that non-judgmental quality of the mindfulness. What's happening right now is what's happening. It can't be any other way. It's already come into being in this way. And moving against what's happening or resisting what's happening causes suffering by its very definition. One thing Ajahn Sumedho says, it's a great relief to accept things the way they are, because the only real misery is wanting them to be in some other way. Another teaching about this acceptance that I found very helpful is from Joko Beck. And she talked about that all of these patterns and habits, all these difficult mind states, are kind of like frozen contractions in our experience. Now, there are these very familiar patterns of contraction and holding that we get into, that we experience as we move into these states, these difficult states. They're very familiar to us. That's one thing we begin to see as we start to pay attention, just how familiar these states are. So these familiar patterns of like hardening almost in our experience, a contraction around experience. And she talks about that hardening or contraction as being like this icy couch. That what we can do with these experiences is just rest in them. And it's as if we could just stretch out onto a couch of ice that is molded perfectly to our shape of our body. Rest on that shape. It's just like that contraction that's happening. Can we just rest in that experience? Just rest exactly in that shape. After I read this, I kind of had this feeling of just being able almost to just, it's like my contractions was just like this lattice work of something that was holding me up. And it's like, oh, I can just rest in this space. It doesn't have to change. It can be like our experience is like this icy couch that's molded exactly to fit our shape. We can completely relax on that bed. So cultivating patience. How do we cultivate this quality? As I said earlier, part of it comes from just the practice itself. As we bring mindfulness to our experience, patience almost comes along for the ride. But we can also actively cultivate. So I'll just talk about a few of the things, and some of them I've touched on already. One of them is cultivation by intention. So cultivating in our actions, even if our mind doesn't feel patient, we can determine to act with patience. So this decision, and this was what I was talking about with respect to that tolerance, acting tolerant even if we don't feel it. This intention to act with patience can rebound on our mind and can cultivate that quality of patience. Earlier this year, I'd been working with a text in the suttas that really kind of emphasized this teaching of acting skillfully, acting with these wholesome qualities, even if we're not feeling them. And so it was kind of highlighted in my experience. And patience and impatience are impatience is a very familiar experience for me. It's one of my strong habits of mind to be impatient. And I was really noticing the impatient, and I had taken on this practice of, well, okay, if I'm feeling the impatience, can I see if I can refrain from having that impatience leak out into my behavior? So I was shopping one day, and I noticed an impatience when I was in the store, going around buying things and picking things up, and I just noticed that the impatience was leaking out in the way that I moved. So I said, okay, well, there's the impatience. Let me see if I can act patiently. Can I change the behavior so that it's not leaking out into my actions? And I kind of slowed down the movements a little bit and just began, you know, acting patiently. And within a few minutes, the mind state changed. It was quite interesting to see that. I wasn't repressing it or trying to change the mind state itself. I was simply seeing if I could refrain from letting it leak into the environment. And that intention rebounded and changed the way the mind was. So we can cultivate patience through looking at our behavior, seeing if we cannot let it leak out into our behavior. We can cultivate patience through reflection, actually thinking about it. This is, we don't often talk about thinking about things at this center. Mostly we talk about just noticing them as they are. But it can help to actually reflect on some of these qualities, to think about the benefits of patience. This can be especially helpful once we've had a little taste of the benefits of patience. Once we've actually experienced some of the benefits, then we can use those experiences to reflect on as a way to help to cultivate more of that intention towards patience. One of the most helpful ways to cultivate patience is to notice it when it's present, to actually let it sink in and appreciate it. If you notice that you're in a patient state of mind, just a simple acknowledgement or recognition, oh, patience is here. That recognition supports the cultivation, the further cultivation of patience. Essentially, the more we actually recognize these wholesome positive qualities, the more the conditions are set for them reappearing in the future. It's like recognizing or bringing our mindfulness to the patience when it arises. Bringing our mindfulness to any of these beautiful qualities is like adding sun and water to that quality. It provides the conditions, it provides supportive conditions for it. And we also, in the noticing of patience, start to see how it shifts our relationship to experience. So in that noticing of patience, we really see the benefits of it. And probably one of the other best way to cultivate patience is to notice when its opposite is there. So to really recognize impatience. So learning about patience doesn't mean that we push away impatience. We can cultivate patience by noticing what gets in its way, by noticing what are the conditions that lead us into impatience. So we start to see these causes and conditions of what essentially takes us towards impatience and what causes and conditions allow us to be more patient. So for instance, a simple thing that I've noticed that allows me to be more patient when I'm driving is to allow enough time to get where I'm going. So that if I know it takes a certain amount of time to get there, I add a little bit of extra time, you know, just for traffic or whatever. And then the impatience doesn't come up. So you can set up some causes and conditions that will support the appearance of patience. If you find situations that lead to impatience, as for example, I found with the driving, I found that I was impatient a lot when I drove because I like to cut the time really short. You know, I like to just, I didn't like to have to wait when I got there. It's like, well, what's the difference? I can wait here in my house or I can wait at the dentist office. You know, I can be aware of seeing, smelling, hearing, tasting, touching either place. And it made the whole experience of getting there much more pleasant because there wasn't this agitation about being late. So if you find situations that lead to impatience, be a bit more attentive. See if there are things that you can change that might support the cultivation of patience. You might notice things at work, for instance, that will tend to lead to impatience. Maybe sitting down to read your emails, particularly at a time if there are some challenging topics being discussed around email. You know, people can get very inflamed around email. So if you know that this is a particular time when a lot of impatience can come up, allow yourself to sit for a moment before you do it and try to consciously bring the intention of patience to the task that you know is likely to cause you impatience. Sort of prepping the mind with this intention of patience consciously. So sometimes as we practice we begin to understand some things through the mindful observation of our experience, and we have some little shifts, some shifts in our experience. We see a pattern and we can let go of it in a moment. We feel anger come up and we see it, oh, this is just a pattern in the mind. It's just heat in the body. And it just disappears. We see that. And we sometimes think that we now understand it, that pattern. Oh, I get it now. Wow, all I have to do is let go. All I have to do is just observe with mindfulness and it will go away. I remember on one retreat, I was experiencing incredible amount of pain, physical pain, and I was observing it and ended up having an experience where experience of metta and a feeling of bliss flooded the body and just eliminated the pain. And this was an early retreat. I think I had done only a couple of retreats, but I remember thinking as I walked up the hill, oh, I'm glad I don't have to go through that again. But we do. We see a pattern, we experience a shift, and it's just a momentary thing. The next day, or even the next hour or the next minute, we're caught by that thing again. So we particularly need to recognize that we need to cultivate patience around this aspect of our practice. That we have some insights, and I call that an insight, where actually we have a kind of a shift in relationship to our experience. And many of you, I think, have experienced this. You know, you're just paying attention to something, and suddenly there's just a little space in the mind around it. And the whole experience changes because of the mindfulness, of the openness to just being with what is. That's an insight. It's a shift of perspective, essentially. It's not come about because of something we've thought or something we've intellectually understood. It's actually a letting go that's happened very deeply in the mind-body process. It's not something that we've done. It's the result, actually. It's the it's not something we can do, but it's something that is a result of conditions that we put into place through our mindfulness, through the practice, through the observation, the just being with things as they are. That sets the conditions for these insights to happen. But the insight doesn't work like knowledge. With knowledge, you know, when you need it to do some task, you can call it up again and use it. But insights don't work that way. We can sometimes recall an insight and remember, yeah, I remember when I could feel this anger and just be with the anger as it was and wasn't caught by the anger. So you can kind of remember it, but that doesn't often actually let you let go of it in that moment. So there needs to be a real patience with the whole process of the unfolding of our practice. That when the fruit is ripe, it will fall from the tree. And there are little moments of it seeming like, oh, there the fruit fell from the tree. And then we think that it's always going to be that way. So patience with this whole process of practice, the whole unfolding of the experience. So patience is a quality that supports the entire path of practice. Initially, it seems that it's just these really afflictive emotions that we need to get past, and then once we're past all of those, that everything will be fine. You know, that's the problem, all of these afflictive emotions. But it's the way our mind relates to experience, really, that's the source of our suffering. Because once we get past some of those afflictive emotions, or we end up more in a settled state, a calmer state, an even or balanced state of mind, a lot of peace or tranquility can come up in meditation, or even just in our lives, we get much more peaceful. And then we start getting dissatisfied with that. Why isn't something happening? This is just ordinary. This is just life. You know, what's this? This is just stuff, you know, it's like, well, there's not particularly afflictive emotions, but isn't something supposed to be happening? So we get dissatisfied with the calm. We get dissatisfied with the peace. So we need patience with just being with what is, no matter what it is, even if that's peace. We get bored with not much happening. So can we just be with what is happening now, here and now? Essentially, the entirety of our practice comes down to whatever is happening right now, can you be aware of it? And also, can you notice what your relationship to it is? What is your, are you relating to it with aversion? Are you relating to it with wanting it, wanting to hold on to it? Are you relating to it with balance of mind? The entire practice, no matter what is happening, whether it's afflictive emotion or a state of peace, the entire practice comes down to that. In that state of peace, is there a little bit of resistance, or is there, if there's just this, you know, ordinariness of experience, is there some judgment that something else should be happening? So patience with the entire, all along the way, we need to have patience with just what is happening. One last piece I'd like to just mention. There are times when we can clearly see the momentum of our minds, the habits of our mind, and we just don't know how to let it go. That it's just, we're stuck to it. We see the suffering of it, and sometimes we just feel like, wow, if I knew how to let go of this, I would. But there's just this, it's like the mind is just in this rut. It's just stuck in this rut, and there's no way to get, it doesn't seem to be any way to get out of that rut. So patience is helpful to allow these states to be as they are, to just allow them to wash through without judgment or aversion. I like to think about, there's an analogy I like to use for mindfulness, for this kind of a state. Our minds kind of have this momentum to them. It's like they've been wound up and they're just in this pattern that they're off on. This is the anger pattern, or this is the frustration pattern, or this is the excitement pattern, or this is the agitation pattern, or this is the lust pattern. We just get into these patterns, and it's just like the mind is wound up, and it's just like a little wind-up toy. It's just going to go down that path. Mindfulness functions like putting a car into neutral, so that momentum of our minds is like the car is going 100 miles an hour down the freeway. And mindfulness functions by putting the car into neutral. It doesn't stop the car. It allows the car to stop because you're no longer adding to the momentum. So the mindfulness, the patient, non-judgmental mindfulness to these things that just we feel like, I would let go of it if I knew how. The mindfulness itself is the letting go, in a sense, that it's the letting go of the adding to the momentum so that it can come to stop of its own accord, in its own time. Patience with how long that takes. Patience with the results. So, any comments or questions that you have? Yeah.
Like as you go throughout your day and you find your mind thinking and thinking and thinking, what's a good reminder or a good way to kind of, you know, just not step out of that, but, you know, to be mindful and to notice what you're doing.
To begin to recognize those patterns?
Yeah.
One of the things I've done is to choose when I have a particularly strong pattern that I want to work with, I set my intention to wake up when it happens. So the first thing I did this with was anger. And in that case, it actually was pretty, it was a pretty good one to use because, so I set my intention to wake up for the anger. And the way anger functions is, pretty much that it feeds itself and escalates. So by the time I remembered, I usually remembered at some point in the process of the anger because it was just like, I was just embedded in that world. And at some point, there was a bit of mindfulness that kicked in. It's like, oh, I'm angry. Okay. I said I was going to pay attention to this. Okay. What is it like? What does it feel like? So just, you know, recognizing, pretty much all I could do at that point was just recognize, yes, I'm angry. So, you know, dedicating yourself or resolving to wake up for a pattern. In my case, what I did, you know, in waking up for that anger, I just, every time I noticed it, I would just bring my attention to it. And there was just a simple recognition. I didn't actually do too much with it because I didn't, at that point, I didn't have too many techniques. So I just, you know, woke up for, yep, this is anger. Okay. Unpleasant. Yeah, this is really unpleasant. What do I do with this? And at some point, I would just go back to work because I didn't have a lot of skills for working with it in the body or anything. But what I noticed over months was that I pretty much woke up for it every time it happened. Maybe not every time, but, you know, I woke up for it a lot. And I began to see that I was waking up for it sooner in the process so that, you know, it was more of a normal level of anger, that it was much easier to deal with. And then I began seeing some of the, like, causes, the impulses that would lead me to anger. And that's when it really became very productive, when I began seeing the causes that would lead to the anger. So if you have something that you want to work with, set your intention to wake up for it. And then when you notice it, allow yourself to be mindful of it. There can be a resistance, particularly if it's a difficult one, you know, like with that anger. It's like, oh, right, I promised myself I was going to be aware of this. Okay. And, you know, it was really unpleasant. But it had great benefit to just that persistence, to just keep trying it. This is also where the resolve comes in. You know, so to keep resolving, I'm going to pay attention to this pattern. When you find yourself in the pattern, particularly if it's an emotional kind of pattern or one that has a lot of strong thinking, it's helpful to come into the body and notice what's going on in the body. You know, just allowing yourself to recognize. And you can do it in a very light way. It doesn't have to be a heavy thing. You might just recognize pleasant, unpleasant, or agitation, ease, just kind of different valences. So is the physical experience pleasant, unpleasant? Is the mind in agitation or ease? Most likely it's going to be agitation and unpleasant with a difficult thing. But just allow yourself to take that in. And just connect with the as much as possible, the physical experience, letting go of thoughts as much as you can. That can be challenging, but just that dedicated, I'm going to work with this pattern, to have it be something that you are consciously using as essentially a project for your mindfulness. I find it really helpful to pick projects. Because, you know, if you just go around saying, oh, yeah, I'm just going to be mindful in the day, you know, it's like, it's pretty vague. So choosing some specific things. And these places where we really get caught, they can be great for learning. You know, we'll really get to see how our minds work. Yeah. Microphone.
I guess I wonder, as one becomes more aware of one's own habits, it becomes easier and easier to see this process in other people. And I wondered what you might share about maybe patience or persistence in terms of dealing with the awareness of other people's persistent habits that are hurting them.
There's Well, there's two sides to it, often. I mean, there is the seeing and feeling compassion for their processes. And there's a wanting them to change because it impacts us. So, you know, there's kind of the two sides of it. And we need to work ourselves on the wanting it them to change because how it impacts us. You know, that's our, they're hitting us with some place of our own clinging, essentially, in that, on that side of it. On the other side, we can practice compassion for them, you know, to essentially cultivate this wish that they be free of their suffering. We cannot change other people. They have to do that changing themselves. And, you know, it's not even often that skillful to tell them, you know, if only you would just pay attention to your anger, you know. Until somebody's really ready to walk into the into this and hear that themselves, it's often not so helpful. So there's a reflection that we can do that can help us to be in a space of offering compassion. And that is a reflection that basically people have to do the work for themselves, that it's their own actions that will lead to their suffering or their happiness. And that they're the ones that have to do something about it, that we can't really, by our wishes, make them change. If they come to us and say, wow, you know, I really see you've changed in the last couple of years. What's been going on? I'd really like to hear about that. That's different. You know, then you can offer something. But, I don't suggest proselytizing that much. So there's the patience in ourselves that we have to cultivate, partly with where they are hitting us, you know, where the, because often those things, they are, you know, kind of rubbing up against something in us. And that's something we need to look at. But the other part, too, of kind of shifting our relationship to others' suffering. You know, because we get caught by when other people suffer because we want to fix it. And sometimes we can do a little bit of changing. We can help to change conditions. I mean, I'm not proposing that we don't, you know, offer support to people who are in need, you know, like the Katrina victims, you know, it's like we can support conditions, but the clinging that people have, the anger that they have about the situation they're in, the suffering that they create in their own minds, that is under their own control. And they have to make that shift themselves. Does that make sense? So May the benefit of our practice together support the cultivation of patience in all of us and in all of those that we meet. May all beings be happy. May all beings be healthy. May all beings be safe. May all beings be at ease. May all beings be free from suffering. Thank you for your attention.